Good mythical morning.
Good mythical morning? That's from another podcast, right?
Oh, yeah. That is okay. Red.
Strike that from the record.
Kind of makes me sick that I do that now. Okay. So, in our first brainstorm, we were talking about how to create an environment where you can come up with ideas to innovate. And then in our next podcast, the brainstorm, we were talking about how you can create an environment that's conducive to making it easier to validate whether or not it was actually a good idea, right? So now what we're talking about is, okay, we've come up with an idea, we think it's good, we've validated it with some people, or maybe not even an idea. We've come up with a problem we're trying to solve. We talked to a lot of people. They seem to have that problem and looks like a good one to solve. We validated it. And now we're trying to come up with an MVP, a minimum viable product. So what we're going to kind of talk about today is like, what does it look like if we were going to leverage our own biases to like create an environment where we're going to be able to make a good MVP? And so, you know, every idea looks perfect in your head. This is one of the things when I talk to like first time entrepreneurs or something, they're like, they put a ton of weight on an idea. They want to guard their idea. Like they're like, God, should I have you sign an NDA before I tell you this idea? Or like, you know, they're just like super scared about their idea getting out. Like that this, and you know, the more seasoned entrepreneurs and people who have experience innovating, they have more of a mindset of like, ideas are dime a dozen.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. I've noticed that too. That people who have a great idea or something or think they do, they don't want to tell anybody about it. And it's like, it's just an idea. That's the easy part. Actually turning the idea into something, that's where all the effort is. And, you know, everybody has ideas. They're cheap. They're easy. They're nothing. They're meaningless. You know?
The people who generally could do something with the idea, like if you told me the idea and I've got the capability, I'm probably already investing myself in other ways. I don't have the capacity to take on your idea at that stage and make something of it. So, right. Yeah, you're probably not going to lose.
Well, yeah, but
you
don't have Neuralink. Yeah,
not yet.
You don't have
not
the
yet.
Capacity, but
How do you know?
You will.
Maybe I do.
Yeah, but it's interesting because it like seems like, okay, build an MVP. That's an easy thing to do. But for whatever reason, like a lot of ideas never get past like, it's in my head stage, right? And so I think this one's going to be an interesting one too, because there's this huge, huge movement called the Lean Startup Movement, and there's books around it. There's all kinds of philosophies, and people have started to do like structured courses and, you know, guides of here's how you follow the Lean Startup Method. And, you know, you got to spend all this time validating, which we talked about last time. And it used to be really important that you would like make sure that you've got this thing fully validated before you build an MVP. And the reason why is because like even a pretty simple app, even like think like a year ago, 2 years ago, a pretty simple app would cost you $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 to build. And so you didn't want to spend that money unless you've spent really good time validating before you built. And now I'm wondering, and I'm curious what you guys' thoughts are, because there's no right answer here, I don't think. I think the math is changing because, I mean, there was apps that even with like Bubble and like Adalo and these no-code solutions, it would be like $3,000 to build an app. I can now like literally within a couple of hours create a prompt, throw it into like Replit or, you know, a vibe coding platform and have a better version of the app built that, you know, even took an app that would cost $3,000 in Adalo or Bubble, I can have it built for free in like 2 hours, and it's going to be a better version. So if building an MVP, this is the first question, if that's that easy now and that inexpensive, does it make sense to start moving on building something maybe even before you validate it at all? Like, does it make sense to even validate?
Well, I think you were talking about validating the problem, right?
Yeah.
So that was sort of not the That's app true. Would be the solution. So I think you would still, that would be kind of a two different things. So you'd still want to validate that it's an issue, that it's a problem, and then I guess validate again that this is maybe the solution or something. But I was going to say something else. Forget what I was.
But. Yeah, no worries. I mean, because here's kind of what I'm thinking. Yeah, I think you're right. It was, we're validating that this is actually a real problem that we should be trying to solve. Of course, probably still going to want to validate that. But then here's where it could differ. Like, maybe if I was going to be a lawyer for one side, I'd say, hey, look, like, now that we know this is a good problem, pick any solution, like anything, and just build it real quick, put it out there and see how it performs with early adopters just as quickly as possible. Because the alternative is you're talking to people saying, hey, do you think you'd like this? Versus, do you like this? Right? So I understand that. But then on the other hand, if I was a lawyer for the other side, I'd say, well, if you put something out there, you could influence them to think, oh, go further down this path, instead of, because like if they see something, they might say, okay, this is good, just change it this way, instead of thinking in a completely different way. So maybe it does make sense to say, to do a little bit more validation as far as like, well, what were you thinking a solution might be, and do this independently with people before you start building.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, actually, was if they build it, you know, prior to validation or something, they might think that, it might skew it. Like, they might get too attached to it because they've put now this effort and they have this thing, and now they love the thing that they have, rather than getting the feedback just about what the customer needs. They might try to force it onto the people or not take feedback as well. I don't know.
It makes me think of, like, multiple things come through mind. It's not like you're just doing validation on one thing. There's maybe multiple tracks, if that's the right way to think about it, and they influence each other. One might be, is it a valid problem? Second, does this thing solve that problem? And a lot of times you might discover that this thing does influence or have a positive effect on the problem, but it actually is a better solution for a different problem. So you don't have to just be sold out on one particular problem either. A third one would be, is there any financial return to it? Can people afford it? Will they pay what it's... I was thinking about ecosystem. Mm-hmm. I think that's one of the things that makes something last. If it gets so built into an ecosystem that you can spin off other things that support the thing, or it slips itself into the ecosystem that already exists. I mean, that's another piece of the puzzle. There's all these different things that you got to be thinking about at the same time. So I feel like I'm not just validating, is it a good problem? But I'm also, while I'm doing that, I'm trying to think through which of these, I like the idea of multiple iterations. It's almost when I recently went to the eye doctor, and they're like, A or B. And I'm like, they're both bad. I don't know. But they keep refining until they get two really close things or two perhaps very different solutions to the same problem. So I wonder if that's one of the gains is you're able to perhaps provide two iterations because it's not very expensive, and you might have two different groups test it or the same group test both and say, well, I like this better because of this. You're like, well, I didn't even realize that was an issue, this other factor that you like.
Yeah. Let me dial it back. I mean, if we're talking about, okay, an MVP that we need to get to, we've got an idea, Why do you think so many ideas don't get out of the idea stage? Like, what do you think causes people to not start building and just keep daydreaming?
Well, I don't know. It's a lot riskier to actually do it, you know, just like, and put your, you kind of putting yourself out there for people to judge, you know, when it's just an idea, you can, it's kind of a reality that it exists, but it's just in your head, you know, and you're successful and it works and mm-hmm. everybody loves it. And, you know, it's, and it's a lot easier and more enjoyable to just think of things, I think. So, but now the a lot of the barriers are not, they can't use that as an excuse really anymore. So it's like, because it's so easy to make these things.
Yeah. So, I mean, I wonder if as that gets out there, more people are proficient with like AI and using LLMs. I wonder if that's going to change, if people are going to start going across those barriers and start building.
What's an LLM?
A large language model.
Oh, okay.
Like yeah, ChatGPT, things like that.
Well, I think that's part of it too. When you're saying what's the barrier, I think part of it is fear. Yep, absolutely. What, and fear is, what am I going to lose more often than whatever it might be? Credibility. I might lose my identity as somebody who's successful, who's a good idea guy. But then I think part of it is, I don't know how to make an app. And it may not be very hard, but if I don't know how, then I have to put myself out there, not just to build the thing, but to figure out how does somebody even make an app. And there are tools that you've described that can do it, but mm-hmm. I don't know what they are. Yesterday, I tore apart a pneumatic air nailer and put it back together and fixed it. And it's like, now I have no fear of repairing a pneumatic air nailer. But before, I had no idea if I'd even be able to put it back together, if I'd lose the parts, if I'd forget what order the pieces go together. I didn't know if there was a complex thing I'd break in the process of taking it apart. So that's one of the reasons I haven't been fixing it, taking it apart. But finally, I thought, well, it's not working now. If I tear it apart and it doesn't work, I haven't lost anything. So I wasn't going to lose anything anyway. So just not knowing what you don't know can be something that just keeps you from trying.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, it's similar to, like, you know, people who want to make, do podcasts or make a YouTube channel. Like, those things are essentially free to do, but people don't, even though they want to. Well, because there's, I think it's mostly fear, you know, putting yourself out there, having people judge you. What if the quality's not good? I don't know how to edit. I don't, you know, a lot of those kinds of things. Even though it's, there's no real cost, time, but these things are free to do.
Right? Yeah. I think fear is a big one. I also think that maybe almost as big, if maybe bigger, I don't know, but another huge one is just decision paralysis of not knowing, I don't know how to do this. I don't know, you know, I don't, how do I get started on this? And like, if you're trying to do a podcast, it's like, okay, well, what, like, how am I going to record it? Like, what format do I use? And then you just get decision paralysis and then just start doom scrolling on TikTok or something. Yeah. You know?
And even the idea of a podcast, my son's got some different channels and stuff that he's a part of through different platforms. And we were talking about this and he said, one of the early challenges is pick a lane. Like, you've got so many things that you can think about, just pick one and do the thing. And I asked him, well, what if you end up not wanting that one? He said, pick a different one. It's like, but the idea of what if I pick the wrong one and then I've wasted whatever time. And he said, it's never a waste because you're learning how to do it and you know what doesn't work.
Yeah. Yeah. Action is where these things actually have the opportunity to turn into real value. Right. And so it's, I totally agree. And I think that's something that I wish I'd learned earlier in life is that, like, it is better to just start going before and we were talking earlier before we started recording about, how did you phrase it? Perfection is the enemy of completion.
Yeah.
Yeah. Completion. I'd always heard it. Perfection is the enemy of good, but I like perfection is the enemy of completion because I think there's a lot of innovation that gets started And then people are like, it's not quite right. It's like, it's not like they're plugging their nose. And so one of the things I always say is that if you're not plugging your nose when you're putting your first MVP out there, you waited too long.
Right.
You didn't do it right.
That's an essential part of an MVP is you don't like it. It's not what you want.
Yeah. It's M.
Minimum.
It's minimum.
It's not minimum
acceptable. It's minimal functional.
Yeah.
And I haven't heard that either, Justin, that perfection's the enemy of completion. I've heard perfection's the enemy of progress. And I think both are true. But when I stop and think about it, that's probably part of it. I have no problem with using ChatGPT to write a cover letter to help my wife, you know, have a thing that she wants to send out and create it and go, wow, that's pretty good. She will spend days and rewrite it and ask our son and then ask me. And then, because I think she thinks the perfect cover letter is out there. And I don't think it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I think would be good? We should change the acronym. It shouldn't be called an MVP. We should call it a CSP. And that would stand for a cringy, smelly product.
I got some of that already.
Yeah, it'd be easy to make one of those.
Yeah. Like if it literally was called a cringy, smelly product, like I think you would be, like I honestly think people would feel better about putting it out there when it was cringy and smelly.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the theories for coaches that help people finish their dissertations.
Yeah.
Is they'll say, write something and I don't want it to be good. Just write something and turn it into me.
Yeah.
And coach gets it back and says, you're right. That's terrible, but you did it. And your next draft's going to be better.
Yeah.
And just getting something out there breaks through some kind of barrier.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say it's like a rough draft of a.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A rough draft of a rough draft is like the worst thing.
Yeah.
And it feels like this is related, but like when I used to teach, when I was a ski instructor, if someone was leaning too far back and they kept falling, like sometimes people, they just have a tendency to like lean way too far back and then they can't, they just keep falling and falling and falling and they just can't get out of this rut. And so I would tell them sometimes, and this worked better with kids. Kids are just so impressionable. But I'd say, okay, I want you to fall this time, but I want you to fall forward. Like if you fall back, we didn't do it right. I want you to fall, but fall forward. And then they would do that, and they would still be leaning so far back they were almost falling, but they wouldn't fall. I'd be like, you're supposed to fall forward, right? And so when they, but like the idea is that like, if you're thinking, okay, I'm going to fail here. I just need to fail in this specific way. I think there's a parallel here that like you can put things out expecting to fail and it makes it a little bit easier.
Do you think part of it is we like things that we can measure and predict the measurability of it? So what I mean by that is if I'm putting out a product, if I know that I'm trying to create a wrench that fits on a 3 millimeter bolt head, I can predict whether or not the head of the wrench is going to fit on that because I can measure it. I can test it myself. I know exactly. But if I'm trying to create a product that somebody will enjoy using, what does that mean? I have no idea. And a lot of products, even if they've fix a solution, they may not be the thing that the person enjoys using or will gravitate towards because it's too complex or too outside of a normal behavior or whatever it might be. And so does it make sense?
Well, like you're saying the predictability, people, we want something to be predictable. And if it's not, it scares us.
Yeah. If I know that I can control as many variables as possible to make it successful and I can predict, at least it's going to fit and it's not going to break. It's
could
tough
be
enough
that.
And it fits. And so I'm like, I can't predict how others are going to perceive this. I think that's part of it. It's like if I know it's going to work, which
or
you don't
if
know,
you
that's
know
the problem.
If you know it's going to fail and you're expecting it and you're wanting to get to a failure faster, you're like, okay, let me put this out there and see where, like as quickly as possible, who hates it and why. Like if you're expecting failure.
Because if you go into it, and even if I said to people, use it, tell me how it doesn't work, I want to know where the breaking points are.
Yeah.
Then you're heading in with the intent of them reviewing it honestly, because you're telling them to identify the breaking points.
Yeah.
And that's a success instead of, oh, I hope it doesn't break.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think why most people don't do the MVP is because it's embarrassing to put out a really crappy product.
Yeah.
You don't want anybody to even see it or know about it or use it, you know, because it's not really something you're proud of, you know, but the perfection one would be the one you're proud of.
Yeah.
You know, and you would put that one out there.
It's only in the history books that the crappy first version is a hero.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah. A computer made out of wood, you know, or whatever is.
It doesn't work well, somewhere. But look, it was the first one. You know, that's when it's valuable.
Yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense, because they don't want to be embarrassed. That, you know, another similar thing is when I was younger and we would go to dances. Like, we were always scared to talk to the girls and try to get their numbers. And then one thing that me and my friends did that was really effective, we all put in like $5 or $10 into a pool. And then the first person to get rejected by asking a girl for her phone number got all the money. So we were going in there wanting to get rejected.
Who is the most likely to reject me? Yeah. Oh, it's her.
Yeah.
She's with that really big, tough guy. I'm going to go ask her right now and see what happens.
You end up with a black eye, but $50, right? But it worked. I mean, we got to a point where, like, asking a girl for their number, like, and trying to, like, you know, taking our shot was, like, not scary at all. And it was because we had gotten rejected so many times and we got used to it. And we were actually seeking out that rejection in the beginning. So
you're disappointed when the cute girl says yes?
Yeah, it's a win either way, man.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, so let me see some of these things, thought experiments, saying when we're building an MVP, like, one of the things it was curious about that it wanted us to discuss, this is AI. AI's really emotionally invested in this. If Google had validated search with a landing page that looked like Ask Jeeves, would it ever have launched? Would the iPhone have survived if Apple's MVP was a clunky Palm Pilot knockoff? So that, I think that's kind of like something saying you need to, you don't just put it out there, a clunky version of a Palm Pilot. You got to spend a little bit more time coming up with what your unique angle is. I don't know. Like, I guess it's just trying to find that balance of when is good enough to put out and when's not.
Yeah. Well, with those questions, it's almost like both of them are, don't just be a clunky knockoff, but be as different as possible. Be as similar as possible to solve the same problem, but be as different as possible. And maybe that's part of it. You throw it out as different as possible, and people go, wait, that's way too different. So then you can back off. But yeah.
What if, this is an interesting thought. This one's, imagine a world where every employee was expected to ship one MVP of something that would improve the company per year. What do you think would happen to that business? Would it be more, would that be, have a positive effect on the business or a negative effect if every employee had to do that?
I like that better than give me an idea. Like, give me an idea is easy. Like you were saying, Justin, ideas are easy to find, and the more experience you get, the more you realize they're all out there. But delivering an MVP is much harder. So that would be an interesting experiment where you can't just give me an idea. You have to come up with an MVP.
You have to build something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just to kind of go down this thought train a little bit, Google, I think 20% of the work hours are tinker hours, where you work on something, like whatever you want, just something that can be completely unrelated to your job. You just start working on something. And apparently out of that came Gmail and AdSense, which are like two of their biggest products. And then like you have the 3M example where they, I think they do 15% is just like free work on whatever you want, right? And that out of that came Post-it notes, which is like their biggest thing. So there's some examples that it does kind of, but that this is like taking it one step further. It's not just work on something. You have to like deliver and ship something that's an MVP. I think maybe in the past, that was an ask that like didn't quite make sense because like how are you going to ship something that costs 60 grand, right? But like I think now like you could, everybody could ship something for free. I don't know. That's an interesting thought to me. What do you guys think? My gut feel says that if every employee had to do that, I think it would maybe feel like we've lost some time to this, but I'll bet you there's going to be, if there's 100 employees that all had to do that, I'll bet you there's going to be 2 or 3 home runs that make up the difference for all the failed ideas.
Well, what I would think is that 50 of the employees wouldn't do it. And then what are you going to do, fire them?
Yeah, they're fired.
They don't get some kind of compensation. I don't know what it would be. Maybe there's a bonus. Maybe there's a...
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if it's part of their work, that they had to do it. Like, I wonder, like...
Yeah, but a lot of times, like, let's... If you have 100 employees, you know, 20 of those are going to be managerial, HR. You know, they're not going to be thinking up ideas and coming up with MVPs and stuff. The 25% or 20% who are like that kind of stuff and are already doing it and thinking of things, they're going to love it.
Well, I think the rest of them, I'll say bet. That's not, maybe not the right term, but buy into other people's products. So I'm going to give you 10% of my time.
Oh, interesting.
To buy into your product because I think it's going to be successful. So it's almost like a horse race all along.
That's an interesting idea.
And you can only achieve so many so that even if I'm not the one coming up with it, I might be one that's helping identify what's going to be a success. And I'm in because if it wins, I get a return. But if I don't, I lose.
That would be interesting because you could some of the employees that could just maybe do that full time. That's what they do because it's like credits everybody has, and they're giving their credits to the guy who likes to think up the ideas or something. I don't know. It'd be an interesting experiment.
It would be interesting because then you're also getting kind of buy-in and validation that the idea is seen as good by other people. So,
and honest feedback too, because if I'm giving you my credits in some way, and by doing so I'm earning a portion of whatever the outcome is, I'm trying to bet on the best.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be honest. I'm going to not go with my buddy Larry because I just think he's a nice guy, but his product is junk.
Yeah, stupid Larry.
stupid Larry.
I want to push back on what you were saying, Justin. Like, if you, like, made this a requirement, I'm saying you make this a requirement of your, like, I'm paying you to do this. You got to do it. Like, what if you had an employee that you were paying to clean the facilities and they just decided not to do it?
Well, because I think that they might be, if they are really good at their job, you're not going to want to get rid of them because it's going to be hard to find somebody to replace them. And if they're resistant to it and don't want to do it, they're probably not going to come up with a good product anyway. So you'd be losing a good employee over something that's not really going to be a useful thing for that person to be doing anyway, right? So it would sort of hinder the productivity of your company.
So you think if you required every employee, so my
I think the credits way is a way to get around stuff like that.
Another thought would be depending on what your field is. So if I'm a custodian and I'm one of the employees, it's not my job to come up with a product that, like, I'm not here to make Post-it notes. Like, I have no idea about how any of that stuff works. But if I'm required to come up with an implemented, not just implementable, an idea that we implement to improve the process, or, you know, identify a better product or a better process or a better schedule or whatever it might be to improve my area,
yeah,
I think building in improvement in your own area, that's probably more viable than a shippable product.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. Like, it could be anything. It could even be not even related to the work.
Oh, yeah.
It's and it doesn't need to actually be implemented. In the way I'm thinking about it is it's just like it needs to be an MVP that could be implemented if it wasn't a stupid idea, right? But the idea that I think is interesting about this is if you made every employee do it, said, I'm paying you, you know, 20% of your day. So maybe not even that. Like, let's say it was 2 hours on Friday, every Friday, you need to be working on something and then you need to have something that could be delivered. I think the idea, and this maybe this comes back to me thinking everyone's an entrepreneur, right? But I think if everybody was thinking about flexing this innovation muscle, like how do we innovate? I think it would kind of create a culture where everyone got a little bit better at innovation, and I think it would be a net positive. I think there would be a lot of losses, but I think it overall would be a net positive.
I think if there's not... There's two ways to think of it, carrot and stick. Mm-hmm. If the stick side is, if you don't do this, you're in trouble. I'm going to withhold something. You're going to lose some income.
Spank you.
That could be a positive for some. So you got to be careful what you're doing there. But if there is net upside, like if you win. And I know there was like airlines. Yeah. There's an airline that had a cost savings program of weight. Because, you know, weight is directly related to the cost of a flight.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody had put different kind of air in the tires and it reduced it by a pound, you know, something small like that. And then somebody decided to go from peanuts to pretzels because pretzels are way lighter. That's one of the reasons they do pretzels and not peanuts. All of these different ideas. And they figured out that by going from peanuts to pretzels, it saves, you know, I don't know, 1.8 gallons per hour of flight.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, that's nothing. Well, it is nothing unless you've got thousands of flights flying thousands of hours.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you get a portion of whatever the savings is. So if there's an upside.
Yeah. I think that makes a lot of sense. That's interesting. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I think let's kind of talk through. Here's the biases. Like if you wanted to actually create an environment, you got something funny going on here.
Yeah, I'm just giggling. Sorry.
Okay. if you wanted to create an environment, actually, you know what? Let me explore this too, because I sometimes daydream about weird stuff. So I was thinking,
I'm not surprised, Ryan.
I was thinking, how cool would it be if you had like a bunch of employees, if you also required them to work out and eat healthy, right? That's one that like, I think that this becomes like something that like is maybe a taboo topic. Like you can't require them to like, but I wonder like, cause like when I work out, I feel like I'm more productive. And when I eat healthy, I feel like I have less brain fog. I feel like I would be a better employee if my employer was requiring an hour of workout every day or even a half an hour of actual workout. But like maybe you have a on-site gym and then like, you know, if you required like at least one healthy meal every day or something like that.
Yeah, I think that some of these Silicon Valley companies have tried this
kind
of stuff. Maybe not in the same way you're saying it, but when I worked for PayPal way back in the day, they had a gym at the facility. They also had health. They had like these health days, health screening days where they bring in health providers or whatever. And basically the healthier you were and the cheaper your insurance rates would be.
Hmm.
And so, you know, I think if you could incentivize somebody like that, like, listen, if you know, you're healthy in these ways or whatever, then it reduces the amount of expense for you over here or something like that. Or you get a bonus, you know, workout bonus or something, you know, rather than just making it mandatory. I think that would be more of a incentivizing for them.
I think but in some ways it would have to be outcomes based. And What I mean by that is not outcomes of performance at work, although that's already incentivized, I hope, but outcomes as far as health. Like, what are the health markers you're aiming for? And the reason I think of that is my family and I have a very different perspective of what a healthy diet is. And if I'm being forced to eat outside of what I think is actually working, but instead of being forced to eat your version of a healthy meal, like what if there's a vegan guy running the company or a carnivore guy running the company? They're going to have very different perspectives. But if the outcome marker, like how is your blood, how is your heart rate, how is your, you know, your BMI or whatever the things are that you determine are the outcomes based. But I do like the idea of building within the culture. It's so much better to build it within the culture and have it become part of the environment that that's just who you are than trying to force particular behaviors. Like if one of the ways you can do it is I'm providing a free healthy meal. You come here, eat lunch. It's a free healthy meal.
Yeah. Like, so it's all about the incentives. And
because then I'm incentivized to come and eat the healthy meal instead of packing a garbage lunch or going out to eat someplace and grabbing a burger and fries someplace quickly. Right.
Yeah, but I think that's would not even debatable whether you would see more productivity if everybody, I mean, I think for sure, if everyone was working out and eating healthy, yeah, you would.
Absolutely.
For sure.
And I think as a private company, you probably could do that if in your onboarding and you just make it clear.
You're doing it for everyone.
The same requirement for everybody, same incentivized program, same everything, and you run it, and there's not discrimination based on factors that, you know, are under the law. You know, as long as you're following it all, I think as a private company, you could probably get away with it.
Yeah. Okay, this has been a good discussion. I want to shift gears, and let's talk a little bit about this idea of building an MVP. I really want to call it a cringy, smelly product. I honestly think just calling it a cringy, smelly product that you have to put out, I honestly think that could have a big impact on whether or not you actually
cringy,
put it out.
Cringy, rancid, awful product.
There you go.
You're creating a piece of C-R-A-P. So yeah. There you go. You're like, that's what I want.
Yeah.
just a basic.
Put out a crappy product. We got to come up with a why.
Kind of give them permission to make it bad, which it's already going to be. So, yeah.
So here's some of the ideas that AI came up with, and there's going to be themes here that we've probably noticed from the past brainstorms, but commitment bias. Join an entrepreneurial club or mastermind where everyone shares weekly builds. Once you commit to showing your progress every Friday, you'll hack something together, right? So, like, maybe you sign up for 1 million cups that you're going to present your MVP. That's a way to create an environment. Social proof, share early mock-ups publicly. Twitter, LinkedIn, Discord, this social exposure nudges you to keep improving because people are watching. Default bias, this is another common one. Block recurring build sprints on your calendar. But I mean, that's to build the MVP. Like people get in these perpetual loops where they're just like building, building, building and never shipping. Right. Mm-hmm. And that's part of the problem. The fresh start effect. That's the one where it's like, hey, every beginning of the month, you take inventory or stock of it. Loss aversion, put money on the line, enter a hackathon with a buy-in or give a friend $50 and only earn it back once you've launched something testable.
Oh, you're going to say give your friend $50 to build one for you.
Yeah, there you go.
It's like paying the geeky kid to do your homework.
Put it on Fiverr.
So
get someone to build it.
Would you do anything like put stipulations around the MVP? Like it can only have 3 features, you know, or whatever. So that people, because that's what people want to do is, oh, well, this would be neat and that would be neat. And then we can put a map on there and a link to the things that they find the whatever. And they just keep.
Dude,
because they have more and more ideas.
And Replit is the worst for that, because when you build it, Replit's like, hey, do you want to add this feature? This feature would be really cool.
Sounds pretty great. Like, I should probably add
that. And then it's like, once it's done with that, it's like, hey, do you know what would go really well with this? And like, I mean, obviously Replit earns its money by the more
sure
things that it does. So
you chase those things and all of a sudden your push lawnmower has a margarita maker built in. You know, like, well, because, you know, I like a good margarita on a Saturday. So you just build in that. Of course, it makes sense.
Yeah. So I guess the idea here is we're saying let's put constraints around it. And what can we do in our environment to create that? Like, my biggest takeaway is call it a crap, not an MVP.
There you go.
That's my biggest takeaway here. My next biggest takeaway is probably creating something where you enter a competition or you do something where it's like, okay, it needs to be built by this day. You give yourself a deadline to build it. That creates an environment where you're gonna actually complete it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We have a monthly gathering, which we have good food and we talk about the product. And there's milestones. If you meet the milestone, you get to come to the party. If you don't, you're out. And then every month, like, whoever doesn't make it doesn't get to come to the party. And so, like, you know, it's like, then there's social pressure. I want to be a part of the in crowd.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like your ideas of how to make that happen. My takeaway, in part, is there something in my field that either I can do?
Mm-hmm.
That is this idea of iteration. It doesn't necessarily have to be a product that's going to be shipped. But
you could make a new book for the Bible.
Oh, hey, it's been tried.
Been tried. Hasn't worked too well.
Well, sometimes it works really good.
Yeah, that's true.
You got L. Ron Hubbard.
Yeah, you just have to spin off Joseph and Smith. Start your own. Start your own cult.
There you go.
It works.
Sorry, I cut you off. Did I cut you off? Did you have
instead of a product, but setting aside time to come up with, like, what could I do to help whatever the outcome is I'm trying to achieve? And is that through the staff that I work with? Is it my own world? But just the idea of always looking for something and then not just coming up with the idea. That's the part that I take away. Idea is not enough. You got to at least try it. Come up with something that's triable and testable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that you're on the right track. Because with the renaming it or whatever, because it's no longer a problem of money or access or resources. It's a psychological problem.
Mm-hmm.
And so however you can, hack your psychology to get yourself to it. So if one of those ways is giving yourself permission to make a bad product, you know, to lower that bar and lower the expectations and the fears, I think that would be a workable, easy thing to implement.
Cool. Yeah. I mean, this has been good. I mean, the one thing that I'm noticing as a recurring theme, I mean, we're talking about creating ideas, validating those ideas, building an MVP. I'm noticing that in each of these steps, I think the first step that a lot of people, I wouldn't say overlook, they just don't do, they don't even think to do, is how can I create an environment that's going to make me successful in completing this step? I think that's kind of one of the things we're calling out in these episodes is like, what could we do to our environment to make us likely to actually execute on whatever step I'm in?
And the environments, I'll say environments because it's time environment. Mm-hmm. It's your physical environment. It's your social environment.
Yeah.
Who are the people around you? What is, like, all of those things all play into how you experience the world. And so shape the experience towards the outcome you're achieving.
Cool. Well, thanks, guys.
Thanks. You.